Welcome to Net Zero Investor with Mona, where we discuss how investors tackle climate change, the biggest issue of the 21st century. Today, we want to take a closer look at the 2025 AGM season in the US especially, and we've picked quite a day for this podcast because we're all awaiting US President Trump's Liberation Day speech and tariff announcements. But what we want to do today is slightly different. We want to zoom in on the longer-term stewardship efforts by US investors. And I'm very pleased that we have got Danielle Fougère today. Danielle is President and Chief Counsel for the shareholder group As You Sow. And I'm also very pleased that we have the New York City Comptroller, Brad Lander, with us today. Thanks for joining us today, Brad and Danielle.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mona. Great to be with you.
A few more words of detail, perhaps, on that. Comptroller Lander is the custodian for the New York City pension systems, which have close to $200 billion in assets and have recently published their climate impact report, which is one of the trends that we will be discussing. And Danielle works very closely with a range of shareholders on climate issues, among others. But let's jump into this AGM season. So we've seen that last year was quite dramatic, with ExxonMobil taking some shareholders to court for filing a climate resolution. We're still pretty early on into the AGM season, but I'm getting the impression that fewer resolutions seem to be filed this year. Is that right, Danielle?
Yes. In fact, filing of ESG resolutions are down approximately 34% this year. And we attribute that to a convergence of factors. First, certainly a wait and see attitude related to the change in administration and what that will mean for shareholder proposals. Second, investors have been under threat of legal action for the past couple of years from the Judiciary Committee and Red State Attorneys General related to ESG issues. So many asset managers and owners have been in the process of reporting to Congress and clarifying the rules of the road with legal counsel. So while filing proposals and collaborating with other investors is not against the law, there definitely has been a process to be gone through to establish that. So we believe we're at the tail end of that. Third, in many cases, we're at a point where the concerns are at issue, such as climate, are fairly evolved. So we've been working with companies for over a decade on these issues. And so many companies are now providing emissions disclosures. They've adopted targets. They've developed climate transition plans. And investors tend to give companies time to demonstrate success. In other cases, the issues are narrower, which makes it more difficult to get through the SEC. So this has been a relatively quiet season for shareholder proposals. And finally, I would just say there's also a tremendous amount of engagement with companies this year. Both, I think, investors and companies in some ways would like to stay out of the limelight. So we've been able to avoid filing proposals in some instances or have negotiated withdrawals after filing proposals.
You already mentioned that there is the changing role of the SEC. We've already seen an increase in no action requests over the last 2 years. Do you think investors might be expecting the SEC to take a slightly more conservative stance now under the Trump administration?
Absolutely. And in fact, they've already done so. They issued mid-season, after proposals were already filed, they changed the rules of the road and went back to the rules that were in effect in the first Trump administration, and gave companies an opportunity to file late no action letters. So that was troubling across the board, and we think was a violation of due process. But we have, in fact, survived many no action challenges already. And Comptroller Lander has got a good example of that. So yes, we're just moving forward. Whatever happens, we continue to move forward.
Okay, let's come back to that in a bit more detail later. I want to turn to Comptroller Lander because you recently, the New York City system put out their climate progress report, and there were some interesting insights there on your approach to stewardship. So can you tell us a bit more about your engagement with banks, especially Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, and Wells Fargo on fossil fuel finance disclosures?
Absolutely. And as you say, that fits into our broader net zero implementation plan, which we adopted 2 years ago with a goal of being net zero in our financed emissions by 2040, so one of the most ambitious plans of any U.S. public pension fund. We are on target. We just released a report that we've financed emissions have gone down 37% from 2019 to 2024, and it's a comprehensive approach that includes engagement, that includes we did divest from fossil fuel reserve owners, that includes scaling up our climate solutions investments, and then, you know, just closing across scopes 1, 2, and 3. So the engagement we're doing right now is with banks. Last year, we filed at JP Morgan, Citibank, and Royal Bank of Canada with a resolution calling on them to disclose the ratio of their fossil fuel loans and investments to their clean energy loans and investments, which they had resisted doing in the past. And those three negotiated with us and reached settlements. And JP Morgan Chase has gone ahead and put the report out. I'm sorry to say Citi and Royal Bank of Canada are dragging their feet, even though they agreed to do it. So we're continuing to push them. And we've got resolutions this year at 4 more banks, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Wells Fargo. And I'm pleased to say those survived the SEC scrutiny that Danielle described.
Yeah, very interesting. Another interesting detail is that the banks in question, some of them have tried to file no action requests with the SEC, and the SEC has actually rejected their bids. So what do you think was it that made your proposal successful, and are there maybe some lessons to be learned for other investors?
Look, we work very hard to make sure we dot the I's and cross the T's on all our work. You know, I mentioned that we've divested fossil fuel reserve owners. A couple of, I think, 4 out of our 750,000 beneficiaries sued us about that. And we won in court because it was consistent with fiduciary duty and because we're really careful about making sure all our work is grounded in our legal responsibilities. And so on these resolutions, they were constructed to be, you know, very precisely developed. One fun thing I'll mention is that this idea of these climate asset ratios was originally put forward by Mark Carney, now the Prime Minister of Canada, in his role at GFANZ. And so, you know, because we were working with something that came from the financial industry and that is an appropriate governance level metric for comparing the ratio of clean energy to fossil fuel lending. First, that's why, you know, JP Morgan Chase and others agreed last year to do it. They see it makes sense. And it was well crafted so that the SEC did not have any grounds to reject the proposal.
And I suppose part of the reason why you're focusing on banks rather than as many other pension funds or long-term asset owners are doing, they're focusing on fossil fuel companies, is because you have, as you mentioned earlier, divested from quite a few of them quite early on. Looking at the wider picture, do you think there is still room for engagement with fossil fuel producers?
Well, first, of course, look, we've said when we divested, we made clear we'll be thrilled when the first legacy fossil fuel company gets to 51% of its revenues from renewables, we'll be excited to come back and reinvest. We, of course, need energy companies to make the energy transition. Some are moving faster than others. None are moving fast enough. One other place that we're engaging, but with a threat of exclusion, is with utilities, which are the biggest source of our Scope 1 emissions. And obviously, utilities need to generate power for their local customers. And they have to make the transition from coal, oil, and gas to renewables. So there's a big debate about what are appropriate science-based targets for utility companies. And our engagement there is precisely about that. What will be acceptable science-based target approvals and credentialers? And I hope we get there because I'd much rather have them adopt real, credible plans and make progress than conclude that they aren't making progress and we should consider divestment. But I will say our engagement is taken more seriously because we did divest fossil fuel reserve owners. You know, as soon as we announced we wanted to see some new progress from utility companies, they got on the phone with us and said, let's talk about what that looks like. We want to have real engagement here. So I think sometimes those things are put, you know, engagement and divestment as though they are strategies mutually exclusive or competitive strategies. To me, they're both tools in your tool belt, and they're best used effectively together.
And I guess purely engagement without any threat of divestment, it becomes pretty meaningless, doesn't it?
Correct. Yes. I think people then at some point be like, well, if they're never going to take their money and go home, you know, we can just give them a glossy annual report or even less than that. You know, if Trump and Republicans start coming in, you know, threatening even glossy annual reports to do nothing at all. And all these folks leaving, you know, the Net Zero Asset Managers Alliance and Ceres is really troubling. So that's why I was so proud of the report that we put out. we are staying the course. We're showing real results. Our returns have been great. Last year, we outperformed our peers, 10% returns, saved taxpayers $1.8 billion, even as we achieve these strong climate goals.
I think the point you made there on potentially reinvesting is a really interesting one. I think we've seen Norges Bank, I think off the top of my head, was it that recently reinvested in a company that's done relatively better. I can't remember the exact company, but that's maybe something worth highlighting because we always talk about divestment as a final step, but it obviously isn't. There's kind of a less linear development, so to speak.
That really helps make a point that I like to make as well. I mean, look, we are universal owners. We own across geographies, across asset classes, across business sectors. You know, when you have $280 billion to invest, you can't like portfolio craft your way to anything, much less net zero. So that means we are exposed to systemic risk and we achieve systemic returns. And when you think about the economy like that, what can we do together that moves real world decarbonization? Of course, we need energy producers to make this transition. So yes, that idea that we have divested fossil fuel reserve owners, but when they get to a majority of revenues derived from renewables, that'll be a great day for planet Earth and for climate investors.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the legal situation, the prospect of legal threats, because I mentioned right at the outset of the podcast last year, we've had this drastic state of ExxonMobil taking shareholders to court. Now, you're no longer really invested in ExxonMobil, but are you at all concerned? I mean, you mentioned before you have been taken to court over your divestment decision. Is this kind of in any way holding you back from filing resolutions?
No. So it definitely has not stopped us from filing resolutions, which we did again this year. Hasn't stopped us from moving aggressively with the utilities engagement that I mentioned. We're constantly engaging with companies. We've asked all of our asset managers to give us what their net zero and decarbonization plans are by this June 30th. So we're staying very aggressive. We did get sued, as I mentioned, but that case got dismissed because the filers did not have standing. We do construct our plan carefully. I'll tell you, be honest. And one thing, there's a set of climate activists who want us to take some money out of BlackRock because they're the world's largest investor and therefore the world's largest investor in fossil fuels. And, you know, they're activists. And so they just want us arbitrarily to move the money because that's their campaign goal. But that would not be consistent with having a rational basis. We're asking all our asset managers to disclose, to give us plans, because we have to keep our very ambitious climate plan on solid legal footing. So we pay attention so that we can be ambitious and make sure we win in court when challenged, that the SEC doesn't dismiss our resolutions, and we can keep achieving these results.
Interesting. We need to come back to the asset manager question in a bit. I just want to bring in Danielle again, because so the legal threats are probably also a huge issue for you. I mean, you're facing off against some powerful interests, and we're looking at, for example, Greenpeace being taken to court and facing huge fines potentially. How concerned are you at AsUSO about legal threats, and is this impacting your strategy in any way?
Well, while it is always a possibility, and we're seeing more and more lawsuits, after Exxon, we made an assessment early on that most companies were not likely to follow Exxon's lead. Exxon had been particularly affronted that it would be challenged by shareholders in a board contest, and that seems to have sort of informed its attitude. To this day, it truly has failed to acknowledge that shareholders challenged its board because the board was poorly managed. The company's value had dropped dramatically. It had fallen off the Dow after nearly 100 years, and the company wasn't being judicious in its capital spending. So we believe that that Exxon's anger over that board vote kind of led to the lawsuit. So it's been an ongoing positioning of Exxon's. But investors responded to that lawsuit loud and clear. Not only did it cost the company time and significant money to file the lawsuit, but it engendered a vote of non-confidence on directors by shareholders. The company lost investors, and it also received substantial negative press. So all of that, we came to the conclusion that companies, other companies were not likely to sue us if we filed. And so we, of course, are going forward with our shareholder proposals, especially, and we think those are especially important at a time when regulatory guardrails are under threat. Shareholders can, you know, it's important for shareholders to stand together and to stand tall, to raise important issues with management boards and other shareholders, and work to resolve material issues of risk before they become a problem, or at least flag those issues to investors. So the importance of continuing this work, we thought, outweighed any potential risk of lawsuits.
Are you perhaps reprioritizing slightly who you're targeting, though, which sectors, and less focusing on energy companies directly, and more as controller lander, for example, on banks or insurers?
To some extent, I think what we have filed with Finer this year with an oil and gas company, but we are truly in a year where there's a lot of movement going forward, continuing to try to engage or work with a company like Exxon. We have to assess the value of that. And what we're working on are companies that use oil and gas. We also are working with utilities and those who use. So AI and its use of electricity is the other side of the utility issue. So working on ensuring that the demand for AI and its use of electricity, that's directed toward renewable energy so that we're not creating more problems than exist currently. So yes, we're being judicious, assessing where we think we can get movement with companies toward these important issues.
Okay. I'm aware that Controller Lander is short on time. He has to go to his next meeting. So I wanted to just bring him in because there's something really interesting you mentioned just now about the asset manager engagement, which is something many of our listeners and readers here in the UK will find extremely interesting. You actually presented your third-party public markets managers with a deadline of the 30th of June to present their decarbonization plans. Can you tell us a bit more about the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so we're largely externally managed. We have in total about 300 asset managers across all our asset classes in public and private markets. And we need them to be aligned with our decarbonization goals if we're going to hit. Obviously, for a time after Larry Fink acknowledged climate risk is a financial risk, they were doing a lot of engagement with their portfolio companies. And we need to see that from all our asset managers. So as part of our plan, we said for public markets managers by this June 30th and for private markets managers by next year, June 30th, we want to see their decarbonization plans and understand how they're approaching this issue. And I'll be very curious to see what we get given the times we live in and how many of them have withdrawn from the Net Zero Asset Managers Coalition. I'm pleased to say we just joined the Net Zero Asset Owners Alliance in order to pull more strongly in the other direction, because we're going to need asset owners to get together. We're going to do our due diligence on our asset managers, but it would be better if asset owners could work together and say, these are the standard expectations we have of our asset managers, as most of those asset owners are like us, universal owners broadly across the economy, and perpetual or very long-term owners. And so we bear the brunt of what will happen if we don't hit Paris-aligned goals. We'll burn up trillions of dollars collectively. So we're going to work hard to hold our asset managers accountable and to being aligned with the goals we have with our money, and preferably more broadly as well. And I really invite any other asset owners interested in doing that work together to join us in the Net Zero Asset Owners Alliance. Let's get as aligned as we can on what we expect from our managers and push together. That'll be a strong push in the opposite direction from what Donald Trump and Republican state treasurers and governors and attorneys general are doing.
That's great to hear, Controller Lander. And one final question, and then I'll really let you go. But what are you going to do if mass managers don't meet your expectations? Because here in the UK, for example, the People's Partnership has actually pulled $28 billion out of State Street. Would you consider similar escalation measures?
Yeah, I loved seeing that. Props to them for it. I mean, the answer is yes. You know, we need to set standards and do it objectively across the board, rather than just, you know, but yes, I mean, the purpose of doing this is to get a good sense of who is managing our money in ways that are aligned with our goals, and where some are doing that and some are not doing that. We absolutely will consider moving the money from those that aren't to those that do.
That's very good to hear. Thank you so much for taking the time, both of you. It's been a really interesting conversation. Lots of food for thought. We'll keep a close eye on what's happening after 30th of June. To our listeners here in the UK, if you want to be part of that conversation again, we've got a Transition Equity Summit coming up on the 24th of April in London. And we've also got a Net Zero Positive Investment Forum coming up on the 30th of April here in London. So I hope I'll see some of you there. Thanks very much for listening in today.
Thanks, Mona.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.